Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Hate Spinnerbait, the podcast.
The podcast.
Neither of us can do an intro anymore. Okay. But we love a friend who immediately calls your loser boyfriend a punk.
Yes.
Being a punk.
Mm-hmm. Morris, okay, that was a good one.
We love you, Morris. You the real MVP, Morris. Everyone else disappointing me right now. Well, no. Okay, like the mom and the sisters are pretty good. But everyone else is disappointing me right now. But hi, everyone. It's Bethany. With me, as always, is Michael Ann. Michael Ann, how are you today? Are we getting in the clown car?
We're getting in the clown car today, y'all. Okay.
I want to
add so a few things. We'll in case nobody looks at our Instagram stories, which if you don't, you're missing out because it's all Taylor Swift content.
Basically.
But she posted Taylor Nation posted the exact same picture they posted the night before the 1989 release last night. The only difference was it's in black and white.
Yeah.
She posted a picture of flowers that U2 sent her, and for some inexplicable reason, her thumb is in it. Didn't need to be in it. It's painted the 1989 blue.
Yeah, it's 1989 blue, baby, and it looks better than our thumb did when we tried to paint ours.
That is for sure. And then on top of that, they posted today, Taylor Nation, they posted a black and white picture of the 1989 era in the concert. They wrote, "It never goes out of style," or whatever. And then they said, "Do you think the outfit's going to be matched or mismatched tonight?" And
oh, blues. That was very exciting. Michael Ann just got celebratory reputation balloons.
I did.
Just went up on her screen for everyone that can't see us.
Which is all of you. Someday we're going to get video, guys. Someday. Yeah. But yeah, she shared that. It was 1989 themed. It's like hinting at like, oh, is our outfit going to be mismatched? That's suspicious. She's only been matched one time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. Well, by the time this comes out, we'll all know whether it happened
or not. So either right now we're calling our shot and saying that it's happening, and all of you are gonna be like, "Oh my god, it did happen!" when you listen to this on Tuesday, or once again we just got in the clown car. Who knows? But either way, it's fun to clown. One of these times, damn it, we're gonna be right.
One of these.
The first
times.
Thing I noticed about that U2 flower picture was her thumb. Like, I legitimately didn't even look at the flowers of the card. I was like, "Why is her blue thumb in this?"
Exactly.
And then I was like, "Oh, what? This is she's actually posting a card." But yeah, I was like, "Sus. Why did that thumb have to be in there, Taylor?" Man, if Ireland gets it, I'm so happy for my people. It'd be amazing whenever it happens. If it happens this weekend, if it happens, whenever.
I just read the tagline under your name. Oh. Bethany's tagline under her name today says, "Luke deserves prison, but he won't get time."
He won't get time. I thought you'd appreciate it. I was logging in today and I was like, what should be my tagline? Because mostly, of course, I'm thinking about Luke and how much I think he's a little And immediately I was like, yes, I know exactly what I would like to say.
I love that. Also, read. I'm really sorry for interrupting you. Please continue.
No, that was a great interruption. I loved it. But yeah, obviously, no matter when we get reputation, we're all going to be freaking out. But also, I really, really hope it means – I would like it to happen sooner rather than later, because as much as this pains me to say, we are running out of tour, and I need her to get a new goddamn reputation outfit. Like, I need to see one, and I need it to get to, like, actually be used more than, like, once. So if we could get a new reputation outfit – and this is no shade to the current outfit. It's the only freaking era that hasn't had another outfit, and I want it to. It deserves it. And yeah, so running out of time, Taylor. I need to see a new Reputation outfit. Thank
Get
you.
It together, Taylor. I will be watching the live stream tonight for sure.
Oh, 100%.
So you'll see my live reaction on the Hate Spinner Bait stories for sure.
Yes, everyone look forward to that. You will have already, by the time you're listening to this, you will already have seen this.
Yes.
I hope you all enjoyed. Time travel. Woo. Okay, let us get down to business. Luke deserves prison, but he won't get time. We are discussing today chapters 8 and 9. They are meaty. This episode is probably going to be long because we've already gone on for like 10 minutes about not even the chapters. So everyone, buckle up. You're probably about to get an old school Hate Spinnerbait episode where it's going to take you a minute to listen to.
Yes.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
And let's see. What do we have to recap? What have we read? Our girl, Emmeline. She's very much, I hate it here, coded. She's living in Colby. She wants to get out. She had a plan to get out and go to a fancy Ivy League school because her biological father talked her into it. And then he like noped right out of it because it turns out he's getting a divorce. So these are like unforeseen financial circumstances. He's coming to town to sell Aunt Ruth's house. Little half-brother Benji, we stan. We love him. And our boy Morris, we love him. And there's this guy Theo who wears, as Luke calls them, hashtag girl jeans. We stan. And he is very artsy fartsy. The last chapter, basically, she took him. She kind of got coerced into taking him around Colby to show him the quote unquote real Colby. And they went to Gert's and they went to the fish market and all this jazz. And during that time, she thought that she had sent a text message to Luke and she hadn't. It didn't go through. We've all been there. And that pretty much catches us up. That's what you missed on Glee. Here we are, chapter 8, picking up right after the ill-fated text message did not go through to Luke.
Also, sidebar, this episode's going to be long. Sorry, y'all. One of our Discord members, M, she had some really really deep insight into this book on our Discord. And
we
I just
love that.
Want to read it. So she says,
please.
So far, The Moon and More is the first Destin novel to feature a working class protagonist.
True.
I mean, Coley was like,
yeah.
No, Coley was rich because her mom was.
She was rich. Her mom had gotten, you know, she had gotten rich, but back in the day, she wasn't. And then like Ruby technically was very poor, but then she goes in and moves in with Jamie, who like is very rich. So it's kind of like,
Yeah, like this is just she's just staying working class this whole time.
Yeah.
The first Destin novel to feature a protagonist who is in a relationship at the start of the novel, excluding that dude Remy Dumped, literally the first time we met him.
Or but Macy and the Truth About Forever.
I was gonna say, were Jason and Macy together or had they like broken up?
They were together and they broke up pretty quickly into it. So I feel like you can get away with saying that she wasn't really in a relationship. But I mean, she was sort of for a minute.
Yeah, kind of. The first Destin novel to significantly expand the role of a minor character from a previous novel. Clay? That's a nice fucking name. Clyde.
I was like, Clut? Aren't you a friend, Clut?
Oh, man.
Oh. Clyde, yeah. That's what you're putting down.
Mm-hmm. I was going to call him Clay, and then I was like, no, that's the guy from Love is Blind. What am I talking about?
Sometimes Love is Blind does just take over the brain. I get it.
Also, this is the first novel since This Lullaby where the protagonist already has a real friend at the start of the book.
Yeah, that's true. Our girls usually don't have a good friend group.
True. Mads, another Discord member, chimes in to say that it's wild to think of how she writes almost exclusively about the wealthy, but all of her main characters are still so likable because normally rich main characters, you know, are like the worst. But this, you know, Destin makes them so relatable. And that's so true. Like, because if you really think about it, like some of these girls are like loaded, like loaded. And, you know,
that's like not ever. Like, even though it's very much mentioned, like, we know how much money they have. Like, that's never the point of the story. It's, like, the opposite of something like a Gossip Girl where the protagonist being rich is, like, their whole personality.
Right. And they don't do anything, like, super extravagant in the books, I'd say, like, to really show their wealth. Like,
I read a lot of books about like rich people because it's just fun to like put yourself into a world where money doesn't matter. Yeah. And like they're always doing big extravagant things, throwing huge parties, going on helicopters, all this shit. Like Destin girls are just like very just normal. A lot of them have like maybe not a lot of them, but they do have like regular jobs. Like they're servers. Yeah. They're, you know, working at this realty company. Like they
I think this is what it shows about millennials, that people, like, basically Destin's characters are upper middle class. Like, some of them mm-hmm. are more than that, but most of them are probably upper middle class. But yeah. to us, upper middle class is rich.
Yes.
We're like, yes. oh my God, look how loaded they are. But, like, really, in the time that they were published, it probably wasn't as, like, I don't think Sarah thought of them as being rich characters, even though, like, I think that we view yeah. them as that now.
Yeah, the financial landscape has changed so much. Like,
yeah,
millennials just we really got fucked. Like, we That's really got, and so I don't even know fucked. What Gen Z and Gen Alpha is gonna have going on. Like, I'm so sorry, y'all. I hope your parents are rich.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Y'all are doing better, or we built a better future for y'all than what was built for us.
Yeah, because we're out here struggling.
Right on the old struggle bus.
And, like, don't even get me started on all of the horrible shit that's going on in American politics right now.
Mm-hmm.
Starting a GoFundMe so that I can move to Stockholm.
Yes. God, what a dream. Mom and I are listening to this episode. I really need you to work on getting your dual citizenship to Ireland. Let's get that started.
So yeah, girl. Did you see that debate? Get started on that dual citizenship, please.
God, I wish. Baby.
I fucking wish. I think I'm too far removed from all of everybody. Like, my grandmother's parents came from Lithuania. I think that's too far. And Irish, we've been over here for fucking ever.
For too long. Damn it. Damn mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if anyone would like to donate to my glance, GoFundMe. She'll be anyone can come visit her in Stockholm. I'm telling you, it'll be a great time. You'll love it. It's a beautiful city.
I will have an air conditioner. I don't care what it takes.
Yeah. Michael Ann sent me a thing the other day about how the US athletes are going to have AC units in their like little bunks for the Olympics. And I was like, they're so real for that.
Yes.
They're Can so American for that, but also so real. I'm like, yeah, man, I get it. I don't want to go be working my, like going and running a race and then coming back to lodging that didn't have AC. No, those people need some air conditioning.
No, I told Andrew, I was like, if we ever do plan a European vacation, it will not be in the summertime. I think May is like my cutoff because there were some days where I was like, literally, why is it so hot? And it wasn't even hot, y'all. It wasn't even hot. I'm from the South.
It was, but just, something about not being able to have AC or anything. Or you like really have to do your research and find hotels that you know will have air conditioning. Because obviously there are some.
Yes.
But not all of them will. So yeah, so you have to like really, really plan that out.
Yeah.
Anyway, again, this episode. I'm sorry, everyone, but
gone off the rails. We don't have the chaos this week. And then we are off the next week as well. So, like, it's 2 weeks almost of catch up.
Yeah. So we're getting it all out now, everyone.
Mm. Also, yes. Our next episode is our 100th episode.
Which will be coming, in 2 weeks. I don't know. Time. I don't.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
We'll post it. We'll post a date. You'll know.
I'll post the calendar today. That was one of my things on my to-do list. So by the time this episode comes out, you'll know.
You'll know. Exactly. Yes. And the other, but yeah, these are very good things. I also think that like upper middle class people don't see themselves as being well to do. And I'm here to tell you, you are.
Yeah. Like even like I've been reflecting a lot about like my upbringing and like my parents grew up super poor. So they always had that like paranoia in them and of like saving money and being like, oh, we can't afford that. Like I only shopped at Walmart. Like I only for clothes. Like all that stuff. I could get like one limited two item like every year if I was really good. But like looking back now, I'm like, okay, so we went to Europe like twice. Like I never had to have a job. I went to private high school. Like,
right.
I'm like, I was actually not as broke as I fucking thought.
You're like, life was like pretty decent.
Yeah. We had a 4-bedroom house. Like, it was a pool. Like, it was not bad. Like, I was now, the year 2024. I'm like, now I would kill for that.
I would love to have all of those things. I also am just like, so amazed. Okay, again, I think we discussed this before, that me as a Floridian, like, if you had a 2-story house, you were rich, just because the architecture, like the way houses were built during the big, you know, basically migration in the 70s, where everyone decided like, let's move to Florida because the real estate's cheap, that they just weren't making houses like that. They weren't making like old school houses or whatever. So I can't tell y'all, when I go up north and I see like all these people, these places that are like average family homes, I'm like, are people in the north just more rich? Like, that they're not, but just because like that's just the way the architecture was built in the north. Obviously, these houses are older, it's a different style. They have, you know, basements and this, that, and the other thing. But to me, I look at like an average family home in somewhere like where Michael Ann is from, and I'm like, wow, y'all were rich, rich.
I know. Like,
but like they're not. It's just my brain can't compute it.
I mean, I've had, you know, there's a lot of housing in the area too that's like double family homes, you know, and those buildings are pretty big, but they fit like two to three families.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, like my brother's house is like fucking huge. Every time I go over there, I'm like, how do you
afford this?
But it's like actually not that big, but like, you know, I live in apartments. Yeah. So I'm right. Like,
so it's just in our perception, we're like, oh my God, this is huge.
I'm like, damn, you're doing well. I'm sure he is. I mean, shout out. He's worked hard. They're all in their 40s. Yeah. It's not like they're, my sister's almost 50.
Wow. Isn't that wild? I mean, like, rock on her. I'm not saying 50 is old, but like, it's just, isn't that crazy to think about? Like, sometimes I think about, I don't know how old like all of me and my sisters are or whatnot. Like, I was talking to a coworker and her youngest just turned 16. And I was like, does that wig you out that your baby is 16 now? And she's like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, there are just certain things that I am that person for my family. Like, when I tell people my age, because I'm the baby in my family, they're like, what? No, that's not possible. You're like 10 in my mind permanently. And I'm like, I know, but I'm a grown adult now.
You're like, yeah, but now I'm in my 30s. I cry for money. I cry. So I cry. Definitely not a kid.
Definitely not a kid. I'm a grown adult with grown adult problems. It's a real struggle.
It is.
But anyways, I'm sure y'all were here to listen to us talk about the class divide.
Yes. The class divide that's only getting worse and worse and worse over time as we prioritize profit over people.
True. Yeah.
Anyway, so the moon and Mars. So chapter 8, y'all. Everybody is asking Emmeline where Luke is because he hasn't been around a lot. And the person to ask her this at the beginning of chapter 8 is Benji. She is going to pick him up to bring him mini golfing, which I love.
Yes, same.
I love Benji. Oh my gosh. I want to take him mini golfing. So. Same. We find out Luke has been ignoring all of her texts and phone calls. She says Mr. Easygoing apparently was not so much right now, at least when it came to bumping into me and Theo. And Morris has no time for this. Morris is like, he's being a baby. Like, get over it, basically. Like, Luke, and then Daisy's trying to be a little bit more level-headed, like, Luke did overreact, but like, look at it from his side. And Morris is still like, no, he's a baby. Fuck that guy, basically. Which, I am the Morris. I am the Morris.
Same.
I have no patience and no time for my friends' partners. Like,
yeah. My biggest advice to most of my girlfriends when they're talking about things, I'm like, just dump them.
Yes. Like, a lot of times I'm like, this isn't worth it. Like, this, no. You don't, do you want to do this forever?
Yeah, right. Like, just dump him.
Just dump him. Yeah, so she's like, I didn't even really want to be out with Theo. I thought I sent that text message. Like, this is kind of crazy. And then a moped drives by, and Morris says, you know, they're really not that annoying. And Daisy and Emmeline both say, yes, they are.
I gotta agree with them on this one.
Yes, I just love that little break in conversation. It's so funny. It's like comedic relief too here in this little spot. Yes.
And it makes it just seem very real, because you would just be like out and about on a summer day with your friends and like talking about something really serious. And then, you know, well, squirrel, like something else would catch your attention.
Exactly. So Emmeline's like, what am I supposed to do? And Daisy's like, just give him time. It's Luke. But Emmeline's still feeling uneasy. She says, apparently all the men in my life had PMS. That is a very 20, when did this book come out? 2013?
Yeah.
Very like 2013 thing to say. Yeah. For sure. But so she gets there to Benji. She's like, where's your dad? And he's like, oh, he's inside talking to mom. They always have super long phone conversations. And she was like, okay, well, I'll just stick my head in and tell him we're leaving. But when she goes inside, she overhears their conversation. And basically it sounds like Leah is asking to come visit, come be at this house with the boys. She probably misses Benji a lot, I have to assume. And her dad's like, no, like, do not come here. Like, that will change everything. That will like change the vibe. Like, he will understand completely that we're not together if you're here, blah, blah, blah. Which is like, I mean, again, like, we say this all the time on the podcast and we're not parents, so like, maybe we should shut the fuck up. But like, I feel like teaching your children, I mean, treating your children like they are human beings who can like understand things, like, you know, obviously no 10-year-old wants to be like, so your parents are getting divorced. Like, nobody wants right. that. That's very traumatic. But like, also, the more you hide it and the more weird shit you're doing, like, he's picking up on this tension. Like, he's in a terrible mood right. on the front porch. Like, he knows there's something going on, but now he knows there's something going on and he's not with his mother for a month. And it's like, right.
yeah, kids are smarter than we give them credit for. Like, he might not know specifically that his parents are separated,
yeah.
but he's picking up on things. He's picking up on vibes. He's picking up on the fact that like things aren't normal. And yeah, instead of just cluing him in, you're hiding things from him. So not only are things awkward, but yeah, then he feels like he's being lied to on top of it. And I'm like, I bet you, again, he might not know specifically like, oh, my parents are getting divorced, but I think he's clued in to things aren't right with his parents.
Right. Like, he can feel the vibes.
Yeah.
So she cuts this conversation off because she's like, I don't want Benji to hear this. So she's like, oh, hello. I didn't hear your conversation at all. Didn't realize you were on the phone. She tells him she's taking Benji to mini golf and he's like, yeah, thank you. And they go to Safariland where they mini golf. And the first thing Benji does when he gets ready is he hits the ball like he's at a real golf course and he's yes. trying to get it like a mile away, which is so funny and so cute.
Like, he is at the Masters is how he does this, because he's only ever seen it on TV and he's never actually like done mini golf of any sort. This Benji's vibe gives me like he grew up a lot like Auden in Along for yeah. the Ride. Like, I feel like he hasn't been allowed to be a kid because his parents are like pretentious assholes who are essentially like, we want you to be a little adult from the time you were born and we're going to make you smart. And it's like, just let your kid be a kid.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we don't know much about Leah, but if she's married to him, we have to assume like something. They're yeah. similar in some way. Yeah, so they play mini golf. She's like, it's okay, like, just do a more gentle touch. And she teaches them how to mini golf. And it's very cute. I love it. And she takes a picture of one of the holes, the windmill. And she called Luke. He doesn't answer. So she takes a picture of Benji playing the game and says, wish you were here. She said, this time I made sure the text went through. And of course, we don't really get a response. After they're done playing putt-putt, what is it really called? Mini golf. They
putt-putt, mini golf. I feel like they're interchangeable terms.
Yeah. he is like, let's play again. And she's like, no, like, let's do something else fun. We'll go to the arcade. She has like one of the cards from this arcade that has money on it. And she like gives it to him and she's like, live your life, man. Go have fun.
Has a balance of $7.79 and she's like, this should keep him busy for a while. And I'm like, how much each of these arcade games cost? Because $7.79 doesn't seem like that much to me.
No, at Dave and Buster's, that would get you like a game and a half. Yes.
So like, I was like, I want to go to Safari Land. This arcade seems dope.
Right. Dollywood's arcade wasn't bad, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. We like an arcade where you can get a lot of bang for your buck, okay?
Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, it's an arcade. But she's like, go run off. And she checks her phone. No reply from Luke. She tried Luke again and went to voicemail. And she said, what was it about suspecting someone was deliberately not answering that made you that much more desperate to reach them? I told myself to calm down and put my phone away. And it's like, yes. If someone's ignoring you and you know it, you're like, all you can think about is like, okay, well, how can I get this person to talk to me?
100%. We have all been there.
We've all been there. So she finds Benji at one of the driving games and her phone rings and she assumes it's Luke. So she picks up and is immediately like, you missed it. Benji's got a lethal swing. Must run in the family, because she at one point hit the ball on a date with Luke and hit him in the face. Which, like, maybe he deserves. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's not Luke. It's Theo. And she's like, oh, sorry. And she slips into a little photo booth to talk to him. And he's just saying, like, oh, I just wanted to let you know, like, the milk crate went over so well with Ivy. It earned me brownie points. Like, I'm so excited. Blah, blah, blah. And then he kind of says, like, so, like, would you be up for playing tour guide again sometime? And she's like, I don't know. I'm really busy at work. And this is like kind of this awkward interaction where she's like trying to deny him, because I think that she thinks the reason Luke isn't talking to her is because they were hanging out. I mean, we're going to find out soon that that's not the reason. And, you know, she kind of blows him off a little bit, but he's like super nice and he like kind of gets it. And he's like, okay, like, bye, basically. And I feel bad for him in this moment.
Yeah, poor Theo. He's trying.
And he's like such a little weirdo.
We love a little weirdo.
What can we say? So then she hangs up and Benji decides that he wants to take pictures with her in this photo booth. And it's extremely cute. And I'm obsessed. And I love a brother-sister sibling moment. It's so cute.
Oh, I love a little bit. Protect Benji at all costs, everyone. Truly.
Protect him at all costs. So, an hour later, she drops Benji off. She sits in the car. Oh, I had no idea Willow was in here, and something touched my leg, and I was like,
what? panic.
I was like, what the hell was that? Willy. Oh, she's so cute. Maybe we should post pictures of our dogs with this episode just for, like,
we should.
The people.
They're so heavily featured, but y'all don't even get to see their cute little faces all the time. We are blessed to.
Did you bonk your head?
That sounded loud.
Yeah, she bonked it on the microphone, so of course it's like as loud as it can
be. Like reverberating.
So anyway, an hour later, she drops Benji off. She watches him walk into the house to make sure he gets in safe. And he took three of their photo booth pictures and she kept one and she put it on her like dashboard so that she could see it when she's driving, which is so cute. And I love that so much.
Yes, be still my heart.
Be still my heart. She still hadn't heard from Luke. So she starts driving around looking for him. She goes to some of our favorite spots. She goes to Abe's Bike. She goes to Last Chance. She goes to the Tip. He's not there. And then she's driving a little bit more and she sees his car outside of Finn's, right next to his friend's Land Cruiser. So she's like, all right, I'm not going to go inside and like, because Will is gossipy. And so she's like, let me just see if I can leave him a note in the car. So she gets into his car, which is unlocked, small town vibes. And
She finds a piece of paper and something scribbled on it. So she turns it around to write a note to him. But then she's like, wait, what is this piece of paper? Turns it back around and figures out that it's a message from that girl from the realty place. And it says, really, you look better without it, in parentheses, your shirt. And then Melissa with her phone number. And she's like, oh, my God, like I have a flash of this like dark haired girl from the office sliding this under his wiper. He didn't throw it out. Like, what the fuck? And then on the bottom, it says in Luke's handwriting, fancy free till Sunday. So she's like, I'm sorry, what the fuck is this? So what she does is she just leaves the note in his driver's side seat so that he sees it right when he opens the door. She doesn't write anything. She just leaves that note. And she's like, I think this is going to get my message across. And it does.
And it does.
And it does. And she goes home and nobody's in her room and she doesn't hear anybody in the house. And she's feeling very alone in that moment. She's like, you know what? I actually kind of wish people were in my room right now because I'm a little lonely. And our poor girl, she's like, what the fuck? Like, and she's been blaming
this guy. Yes. Yeah. This guy had the audacity to be an asshole to her when he shows up, you know, when he sees her with Theo. And it turns out that really he was the one up to no good, which again is just so like is the case. Like when someone feels guilty about something, they're like looking for a reason to like pass the blame. But Luke.
I know. So then we fast forward to the next morning. She's at Last Chance. She's meeting Luke. Okay. The waitress at Last Chance has a lip ring and a tattoo of what looked like a circle of protractors. And I was like, is this our girl? Is this our girl, Chloe?
I think it might be our girl. The lip ring is definitely giving me, right? Like, I feel like it has to be.
And then later, like a cut, like the next page, it says something else that I'm like, then it confirms that they're at Last Chance. And I'm like, oh, this has to be her. I feel like the circle of protractors tattoo should be bringing us back to something that went on in that book. But I like, it's blank.
Yeah, but, I feel like I'm not getting it, and I feel like I should be getting it.
It's just such a specific description.
Yes.
For her to throw in for somebody that we shouldn't know already. So also I'm like desperate for a Keeping the Moon cameo.
Yes. Give me a Keeping the Moon cameo, damn it. Come on, Sarah. Don't let me down.
Let me down. I know that book's one of your first, but like, please.
Please. Is that the Last Chance? It has to be. Give me somebody. Give me, you know, like Norman looking up to Clyde as a fellow Colby artiste or something. Give me something.
Or give me Amira. Just this little
Give me peek. Amira. Please give me Amira. Oh, God. I'd live for that.
Yes. So we find out she's at Last Chance because he called her yesterday after he saw that note. And he was like, we need to talk in person. Like, meet me at Last Chance before work at 8. If anybody asked me to meet them somewhere at 8 a.m., I would be like, you're off your damn mind. I block my calendar off at work every single day from 8 to 10. And I'm like, I will not take a meeting before 10 a.m.
Yeah, no. My brain isn't functioning. Also, no. I'm like, yeah, what teenage boy is like, let's meet at 8 a.m.?
I guess maybe a teenage boy with this kind of job.
Yeah, I guess. Or a guilty conscience. Or both. I'm not sure. But I was like, y'all are 8 a.m. No, thank you.
So she's like nervous. And he comes in and he immediately says, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And she's like, well, I don't know what you're apologizing for yet. So get to it. And he didn't speak. So she was like, all right, so you were mad at me for not returning your text because I was with Theo. So you called her. So I get it. Like, I'm not happy. And then this is where he admits, like, actually, I called her before I saw you with Theo.
Which I will give him credit for his honesty here. But that's true. About it.
Yeah, he could have easily lied right there. She was kind of giving him like an out.
Yes, exactly. Which I was like, oh, sweet, sweet summer child. She's like already making excuses for him and trying to make it better for him. And yeah, I will give him credit that he doesn't take the easy way out on that. And he's like, actually.
Yeah. And she's like, why did you do that? And he says, I don't know. And she was like, well, that's not an acceptable answer. So try again. I love how like direct and no bullshit Emmeline is and has been this whole book. Like, she is like, no, go fuck yourself. Like, I deserve more than this. Give me more than this, you know?
100%. Yes. Love that. I wish I was like that, you know, like sure of myself instead of for myself that much when I was her age. So truly respect.
Me too. My nieces are like that. And every time they say anything, I'm just like, I love you guys.
So proud.
Little bad bitches. So then he's like, she was like, so you cheated on me. And he was like, no, it wasn't like that. I don't know why I called her, but I did. And she said she was going out with her friends. So after I saw you with Theo, I met up with her. And she's like, did you sleep with her? We don't actually get like, he didn't sleep with her, but we don't really get more information beyond that. Like, right. Did they kiss? Did they, like, I have to assume they, like, at least kissed. Like, they had something
They were grinding at the floor at the club, which this is where we add insult to injury. Where he met up with her, y'all, was tally-ho.
Tally-ho.
No to tally-ho. Especially mm-hmm. when you're going there to meet up with another woman. Girl, yep. Whatever, when you are in a relationship. And I like his excuses of like, things have been weird for us recently. And it's like, so have a conversation about it. Take a break. Don't just call up some random stranger and then use the excuse of like, well, there's been tension. And again, this is totally him. You know, she said like Luke's kind of been calling her prude because ever mm-hmm. since they got caught at her house, things have been weird. This is totally him being like, you're not putting out enough for me. So I had to get it elsewhere. And it's like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah. Like, that's not what's happening here. Like, you are Shady McShaderton.
Yes. Yeah, she is pissed about this tally-ho revelation. She's like, Luke, really? Seriously.
And they order, and then they don't really sit there. I mean, they sit there and don't say anything. And finally she's like, so do we break up now? And he's like, I don't know, like maybe we should spend some time apart. And she's like, that's such a cliche, like next you'll be saying it's not me, it's you. And he's like, listen, we've been together since the 9th grade, we go to college in a few weeks, like maybe this is happening for a reason. Like, maybe we're both missing out on something. And she says, like a date with some tourist at tally-ho. And like, yeah, that exact. Like, I'm like, what are you really saying here? Because you just called a random tourist and met her at a club. So obviously something's missing for you. And like, you know what I mean? So he's like, listen, if you think about it, you'll get what I'm talking about. And she's like, don't hold your breath. I didn't need to get anything, Luke. You did this. Like, she's like, fuck you. And she's been feeling so guilty.
Yes.
About getting caught with Theo. And what she was doing with Theo was like so innocent. Like, it was for the documentary. Right. Like, it was just to help him out. There was no like romantic, at least on her end. Like, I think Theo like has a crush on her, clearly.
I think Theo's feeling it.
Yeah.
But for her, it was innocent. Yeah.
Yeah. And like,
and in fairness to Theo, he didn't pull anything. Like, he really did. Like, I think he has feelings for her, but they really did just go and do innocent things. You know, like, he was respectful.
Yeah. He's not trying to cross that boundary. So then he just eventually gets up and leaves. He like says, I'm sorry. And then he just leaves. And she is like, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a sudden blur of movement as he slid out of his seat, left some bills for the breakfast he wouldn't eat, and walked away. As he did, I thought again of those mornings in the hallway at school, way back in 9th grade. Everything had started in such sharp, deep detail, each aspect pronounced and clear. Obviously, endings were different, harder to see, full of shapes that could be one thing or another, with all the things that you were once so sure of suddenly not familiar, if they were even recognizable at all.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, breaking up with someone you've been with for so long, especially when you're like 17. Like, yes, they've been together for her entire, like, you know, teenage years. She doesn't really know what it is like without him. And now he's just like, not only did he do like the ultimate betrayal, but he also is gone now. Like, he's gone.
Yeah.
And that is rough.
Trying to paint it like this is like for her in a sense. Yeah. Like, you know, we're both young and we're about to go to college. And like, in all honesty, he's probably right. Like, it's very rare that high school sweethearts do make it. Like, obviously they do. Hey, mom and dad. But there is, you know, no shame in kind of growing up and realizing like, hey, we might not be the same people or whatever. But I just hate that he did something bad. And then he's trying to like paint it as like, I'm doing this for us. Like, I'm taking, you know, the smart road and we deserve to try things or whatever. But yeah, it basically sounds like, I want to be a little horn dog before we go to college, or, you know, now that we're going to college, I want to be able to go be a little horn dog. And if I'm tied to you, I can't do that. And it's like, ugh, that's just, you're disgusting, Luke. That's terrible. But yeah.
I got dumped that same exact way. Yeah. Summer going into freshman year.
People.
The same way.
Very much freak out, I think, before, if they're in a like a long-term relationship with someone before going to college, of being like, I want to be free and whatever in college. And again, there's no shame in that, but don't paint it like you're doing the other person a favor, you know, like,
right
just own it, what you want to do.
Right. Also, me and that person kept dating on and off until I was 21, so like, so, yeah. What was the point?
Yeah,
now he's dead. Yeah.
It's not funny.
It's not funny. But if I don't laugh, what am I going to do?
What are you going to do? Know? Yeah. It's just sometimes morbid humor is the way to handle things.
The way to go. But it's really all we can do now with everything going on.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Exactly. But yeah, it's definitely giving, you know, I gave you all that youth for free. Like, that lyric immediately popped in my head when they were breaking up. And it's like, oh, yeah, I give you. That's a great line, y'all.
That's a great line. Oh my God. Especially because, like, it's not even like, it's more impactful that Taylor is talking about like her mid to late 20s to into her 30s. Mm-hmm. Because that is such like a pivotal time for women.
Yes.
Like, fertility wise, first of all, like, and like all sorts of stuff. And it, yeah, that is.
Yeah, and you're like, the things I could have done with my 20s, but instead I was tied to your ass who wouldn't let me leave the house.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, anyways, I digress. Chapter 9, baby, this chapter, it's good. It's meaty. There's a lot to discuss.
A lot.
She shows up to work a half hour late because obviously our girl was going through it. She is in a shock major right now, to use xenon terminology. That's the best way I can describe this. She's in shock major. Okay, so this sentence here, like the third paragraph down at the beginning of chapter 9, I think is brilliant. Miss Dessen, this is brilliant. She talks about the fact that she was talked into taking Luke's food to go, because obviously he left before they were actually served their breakfast. And she just kind of sat there in shock, received this breakfast, and then there's this full plate of food that's untouched. And our server, who may have been our girl Coley, we're uncertain, but we think it could have been, is like, you should take it to go. It's actually really easy to like beam it. It reheats well. I respect anyone who will be honest with you about what does and does not reheat well. I had a roommate in college who was very good at that. At the job she worked, she would tell you, do not pack this up to go, or do pack this up to go from where she worked. Anyways, we love. So she talks about, she takes this box with her and she says, I passed three garbage cans on the way and told myself at each one I should toss it in, but I didn't. Like, that box held the last little piece of what was normal and I wasn't ready to give up just yet.
God, it's so good.
That's just
so good.
So good. And it just, it so explains how you feel like when you are, again, like this was like a 4-year relationship. And he just left her. And she's like, I just have this little biscuit from the last chance. Like, this is my last little bit of normal. And so she's not ready to let it go yet. And that is very understandable. So when she gets to the office, they are having their like weekly meeting, which is a new, of course, Margo initiated thing. And of course, Margot is in a mood that she was not there, you know, on time. And she's like, so nice of you to join us, Emmeline. And I'm like, shut your face, Margot. You don't know what she just went through. Okay. So she's like, well, I guess we'll start now. And of course, her grandma isn't there. And so this new girl, Rebecca, is like, hey, where's grandma? Well, she calls her Mrs. Merritt, of course, because it's not her grandma. And it'd be weird if she was like, hey, where's grandma, when it's not actually her blood relation. And so she's like, hey, where she's at? And she's like, oh, we'll just start without her. And Emmeline's kind of like, yeah, this is how it always goes. Like, obviously, grandma really runs the show, but Margot thinks that she does. And so she's just like, oh, I've got, you know, an itinerary of the meeting. We'll fill her in when she gets here. And apparently it's always kind of like a give and take, and her mom ends up being the mediator between the two of them of what they actually can, you know, get done. So she talks about the first thing is what I love the term she uses. Oh, when she talks about people's foodstuffs, people not being respectful of that, people's foodstuffs. And they're like, food what? And she's like, I'll drink snacks and lunches in the office kitchen. So basically what Margot's mad about is her coconut water keeps being taken from the kitchen, even though she has her name on it. She's like printed her name on it. And she has a theory that it is Emmeline taking it. And Emmeline's, I'm not taking your freaking. And I love that they keep calling it coconut juice too. And Margot's like, it's coconut water. She is so type A. I love that for her.
She is.
And so she's just like really upset about that. She basically is holding a whole meeting so she can yell at people about stealing her coconut water, essentially. And so she's like, item number two on the list is staff uniforms. And apparently this is a conversation they've had before. And everyone's like, oh my God, this is terrible. The thing that I'm really disturbed by is apparently it's going to be khaki and denim shirts. And she says that denim shirts yes. are perfect for the beach. And I'm like, in what world? Like, that sounds hot and miserable. Like, how is that like perfect? Like Hawaiian shirts, like a nice light colored tank top, like a dry fit shirt. Was dry fit like a thing? Had we started doing dry fit yet at this point? I don't know. I think so.
Definitely.
Yeah, right? Definitely. By 25, I think we were doing that. That would make sense. But denim shirts, I was like, and what, that makes no sense. That sounds hot and miserable. But okay, Margo. Mm-hmm. She does throw a little shade to Luke, which he deserves. She's like, you know, instead of some shirtless barefoot stranger showing up to do maintenance your pool, and we're all like, we know who she's talking about. So yeah, so she's just mm-hmm. going on about, you know, maybe they can wear t-shirts, but in the office we're gonna wear these denim shirts, and it's a lot, and I cannot agree with the denim, I'm sorry. So then she's talking about, you know, she's that everyone would have to self-pay for them. And Emmeline's like, what the fuck? I don't even want to wear this uniform. And now you're telling me I have to pay for it. Like, hell's to the nah. And so Margot's like, I'm sure you and your boyfriend can afford this uniform. And she's like, well, he's not my boyfriend anymore. And anyway, and so of course it's like, record scratch. Everyone at this meeting is instantly like, what? What did you just say about Luke and him not being your boyfriend anymore? And so she, of course, kind of wants to move on. She's like, nothing. Like, I didn't say anything. And then Margot getting very savage, way too honest, when your little sister has just gotten her heart broken, says, wow, Margot said, her eyes wide. I figured you'd probably break up in the fall at school, but what? Rude. I just wrote
true
cold next to it. So true, but cold. Not the time to say it.
Keep that to yourself.
Yeah, and her mom is like, hush, that's okay. We'll all talk about this. Again, later on when Emmeline like leaves the office, Margo and her mom are going to get together and be like, well, we all saw this happen. But you're not going to say it to her right then and there.
Right.
So she's just like, oh gosh, this is terrible. Just then, saved by grandma. Grandma walks in and is like, oh goodness, is it Friday already? Oh, is it that we're having this meeting? And what is she happens to be holding but a freaking coconut water? And so now we know who has taken the coconut water. And it's grandma. And she's like, oh, it's lovely. It's delicious. And doesn't even realize that Margot's like fuming inside. So they bring up the uniforms with her. Grandma's like, we'll go to the printer shop that we like, and we'll get a couple of t-shirts made for the people outside the office. In the office, if they come in here, they know we work here. Like, that's dumb. We don't need to be doing that, which, yay, for them finding a happy medium. Again, mom kind of comes in as mediator. So then, basically, Emmeline's trying to play nice, and she was like, you know, personally, I'd like having to have a shirt to wear every day, then I wouldn't have to think of what I wake up and think about what I'm going to wear. And Margot's like looking at her outfit, which is pretty much always like shorts and a tank top, and is like, are you serious? You're saying you put thought into this now? Which again, I'm like, so savage this morning, but also so like sister to say. And so then she's like, hey, I'm kidding. I'm sorry about you and Luke. And so they kind of have like a little moment, nice little moment. She's like, oh, thanks. And so Margot asks, do you think it's really over, just a fight? And she says, I don't know. It's just really weird. So she gets a little bit of sympathy from Margot, which is nice. And then she, you know, basically gets to work and is, you know, getting her list together of the things that the different rental properties need, like towels and such. And she sees one of the notifications, which says functioning high-end brand name toaster oven with temperature adjust feature and varied toast doneness options, only new from box acceptable ASAP. And so, of course, before she even looks at what house this is, she knows what house it is because she knows this has Ivy Mendelsohn written all over it, right? And so she's like, ugh. So she goes to her mom and she's like, I'm sure it's working. Well, she goes to her mom and she overhears a conversation that she's having with Amber. And she's like, no, she wouldn't tell me. Of course I did, but. And so she comes in and, of course, her mom acts like she's been caught doing something she shouldn't. And she's like, oh, Emmeline, hello. Hi. You didn't just catch me on the phone talking about your breakup with your sister. No. Nothing to see here. Nothing to see. And she's like, you're talking to Amber and you're talking about me. It's fine. I get it. And so she's like, what the F? This house is brand new. All the appliances are brand new. There is no way that this toaster oven is not working. This lady is just snooty. And she's like, well, you know, trying to give her the benefit of the doubt. Her mom, she's like, well, it could be a lemon. That does happen. Sort of brand new things aren't working. And she's like, she's spending like $10,000 on this house. Like, we're just going to give her what she wants. And she's like, do you want to stay here today and work in the lobby? Like, you seem like maybe doing the errands is going to be good for her. And Emmeline's like, oh, no, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. I'm not staying in this office and having y'all pity me and ask me questions. Like, I'd rather go and do stuff. So she gets what she wants. She gets to go out and run these errands, even though she's not in the mood to do it. On her way, she sees, wait for it, someone with a loping walk. Oh, they always gotta have a loping walk. It is a destined boy, but not a romantic destined boy, but still a boy that we love. And that is, of course, our boy Morris. She sees he's just walking along the side of the road. So she pulls over and she's like, hey, you want a ride? I love this line. She says, he considered this, like he actually preferred walking before saying, sure. I love that. So he hops on into the passenger chant,
passenger.
I always chant passenger when someone comes on and hops into my car. Let me tell you, that's normal, right?
Always.
Given. So he slides on into the passenger seat. Notices the box, the biscuit, and he's like, that's yours. And she's like, oh, it's Luke's from last chance. And he's like, huh. And so then she tells him that they broke up that morning. And he's like, are you serious? Like, for real? And she's like, yeah, there's some other girl, apparently. He asks if the person is from here. She says, nope. And then he does like the greatest thing ever. And he just reaches into this. She explains like, I don't know. I have this. I should throw it away. And he just like pops it into his mouth, like eats it in like two bites, throws the box into the back seat and just says, asshole. And I've never loved someone more. Like, honestly, iconic, Morris.
Iconic.
And she says, for some reason, it was this, not the breakup itself, not the shock afterward, not even Margot's kind words that finally made me cry. The tears just came, blurring all the brake lights ahead. Morris, I said. And so he's like, cheating, no shirt wearing loser. He's a punk. And she tells him, you know, fills him on the details. He went out to Tally Ho. And he just keeps being like, punk, what a punk. Like, he is like, there is nothing you can do to explain this. And Morris's eyes, he's like, nope, loser, punk, move on. We're done with him. And I love this. And she just like gets to have a moment. She gets to blubber and she needs that. And she said like she usually would be embarrassed, but this isn't anything Morris hasn't seen. Like the first time he saw it was when they were 8 and she like broke her arm. And she just, you know, feels comfortable with him. I love that when she gets this line up here gets me. She's like, oh my God, I'm such a mess. Like, we're almost off the island. I didn't ask where you were going. And he shrugs and says, no place, wherever you are. Morris. Aww, what Morris. A good friend. I love
He's
him.
Such a good friend.
I love him so much. So I'm happy that she got to like have that moment and just let herself like feel it, you know, because mm-hmm. And then she ends up at the Sand Dollar where she is talking to Theo about this toaster oven. And he says, well, I suppose it would depend on your specific definition of not working. And she's like, you're saying there's more than one definition, which I love. I love this entire conversation they have. Like, she is just, obviously, she's had a morning. Which, again, is something that Theo picks up on. Unlike everyone basically in her life picks up on when she's having emotions, except for, you know, her longtime boyfriend. But whatever, Luke, just another strike against you. So, so, yes, they have this conversation. And he's impressed by her vocabulary. And she's like, it's just because I'm around here, I can't use big words. And he's like, no, it's just kind of an SAT word choice. Like, no one uses that when they're talking about breakfast. So he kind of explains what the issue is, which is that it just has like light, medium, and dark. There's no like shades of gray. It's very binary. Like, you can't, you know, get it just so. And so, of course, Emmeline, who's just not having it because she's had a bad morning, is like, you want gray toast? And he's like, obviously not, Emmeline. You know what I mean. Like, I know you know what I mean. And so she's like, oh, fine. And she was like, well, usually, you know, if an appliance is working, we wouldn't, you just have to get it on your own. But since you're, you know, VIPs, like, we're going to go ahead and replace this for you. Her mom had texted her that. And she also texted her, like, if you need me, call, love you. And so she kind of feels like a little emotion again. And she's like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? And it's like, nothing. You're having normal human feelings that you're allowed to have. Yes. You went through something. You're allowed to feel emotional about it. So Theo is pleased as punch. He's like, this is great. This is really going to make Ivy's day. Thank you so much. Like, again, he is just like a little lapdog trying to please Ivy. Boy, take it down a notch. And so she's like, oh my God, like, you are really pushy. And again, he's like, well, that depends on your definition of pushy. Personally, I like to call myself driven. It's different. She's like, okay. So they're headed to Big Club. And can I just say, one of my favorite things about Sarah Dessen is when she makes her own version of things, like Yumi.com. This is obviously a play on Sam's Club. Like, I love the names of them always. I'm like, Big Club.
Yes.
This is different, like a Sam's or like a Costco type vibe. They actually have to like leave Colby. They have to like leave the island to go there because it's bigger than the Park Mart. So when they want to do like the big shopping, which again, being a realty company, I'm sure they buy a lot of things in bulk. So it makes sense that like they probably have to go there every once in a while. And she says that they have more like options for toaster ovens. So they head on out. And she's just, again, kind of like, do you like your job? Like, this job sounds terrible. Like, he talks about the cat diarrhea and the litter and all this and all these things. And he's like, yeah, I didn't get into it for that. But like, that's just part of the experience. Like, I'm in it for the, you know, to work with such a renowned filmmaker. Like, I don't know if y'all know this, but you know, she made Cooper's Way, because
I wouldn't, you wouldn't know. They don't mention that all the time. I'd be like, we got it already, Ivy. She made Cooper's Way.
So anyways, he's like, I'm not going to put that stuff, the fumigator and purveyor of toaster ovens, on my resume. And he's like, but you take the bad to get the great. That's how it works, right? And so he says, you know, it's a job. If not, they would call it play. And they kind of talk about the fact that, like, his parents were a little bit older. So he's like, you know, my dad wasn't great at certain things. Like, he didn't have the stamina to go play catch, but he was great at, oh, man. A random mic and a Luna just appeared. Sorry, everyone. And I was like, I'm like, oh, hi, baby girl. Anyway, so he's like, but he was really great at saying. So he had a saying for everything. And she's like, oh, okay. So he is absolutely just flabbergasted by Big Club and the size of it. And Emmeline is like, oh, like, I just assumed everything in New York was huge. And he's like, oh, common misconception, because it's such a vast city. Like, he's like, my apartment is so small. Like, everything is, it's both like large and small at the same time. Like, it's a whole, what's the word I'm looking for? Contradiction. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. And yes. So, yeah, so they go, they look at these toaster ovens. Oh, this is when he kind of, talks about, you know, his dad, his parents being a little older, whatnot. And so then who do they run into at the old Big Club? But the man, the myth, the legend himself, Clyde. And Emmeline is like, no way this man is going to talk to me. Like, we don't usually, like, chat. But he's like, hey, Emmeline. feeling? And she's like, oh, okay. How am I getting out of this without Theo realizing who we're talking to? This is awkward. He's about to like pee his pants if he realizes who we're talking to. So Clyde approaches her because he knows obviously what her dad does for a living. And there's a hole in the ceiling of the washroom. And he's like, hey, you know, I need to get in touch with your dad. He's still doing some contracting, right? Because I need to fix this hole. And she's like, yeah, he's still doing it or whatever. I like that he says sound or ocean end. And she says sound because, again, if you visit a good North Carolina beach, a little island, that is very much the case. One side is usually the sound. One side is the ocean. And that just made me happy because it made me think of my little family vacays. But anyways, yeah, cuties. So they're having this whole conversation and he's like, oh, can I take down his number real quick? And she's like, yeah, yeah. And she's like, okay, like we're going to escape this. Theo's not even paying attention. Like this is fine. We're fine. And then no, because Clyde gives Theo a little polite nod when Theo looks up at him. And the next thing she knows, Theo is sticking out his hand and he's like, Theo Burns. And Clyde, of course, introduces himself. And she's like, the shock that went through Theo as he heard this was like a gunshot. I literally felt it hit him, then reverberate all around us. So, yeah, he is having it like he cannot breathe. Like he is freaking the fuck out right now, which I can understand. Here we go again. He's Ivy Mendelsohn, the director of Cooper's Way.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, we're here, we're trying to do a documentary, and we are just obsessed with you, and we bought these milk crates, and this and the other thing. And Clyde's just like, yeah, I'm sure Gert really liked you buying a milk crate. Like, I'm sure he really thought you were strange. And Emmeline's like, well, he got $50 off it, so he's pretty happy. And he's like, well, he does like a dollar, so I can understand him being happy with that. So yeah, so here's Theo just explaining to the man himself about his own work, which again must be just so bizarre. And he's like, well, because that's in your work and this, and everyone thought it was that, and but it actually must be because of this farm. And Clyde's probably like, okay, I mean, I would know because I'm me, but you know. He's like, go off, I guess. And so he's like, you know, please talk to us. I promise it'll be better than your last experience with the magazine of the Times in 1999. Emmeline's like, we do. We all know about how bad that was. I don't know about how bad that went, but okay. And so he's like, you know, just give us a chance. And so Emmeline's like trying to kind of calm him down and make this like less of an awkward situation. And Clyde like agrees. He agrees to meet up with him. And he's like, yeah, just like run it by your boss. And so of course Theo thinks that he means Ivy. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, no, Emmeline, run it through Emmeline. And I'm like, okay.
Yes.
And Emmeline's like, what the F? How did I get involved in this? And so, yeah. So he is just having like an absolute like adrenaline rush, essentially. And he's like, please, for the love of God, tell me that actually just happened. And Emmeline, who is equally surprised, is like, I think so. Like, I think that just happened. And she's like, can we go now? Because this was kind of awkward for me. And then he turns to face her, a smile slowly spreading across his face. Behind him, toaster ovens and microwaves were stacked up high over us, facing mini fridges on the other side. And it was there, surrounded by low-price appliances, that Theo suddenly stepped forward and kissed me. In a bulk store with high ceilings and vast quantities, more of anything than you could ever really need. And the weirdest part was that in that moment, after feeling so small all morning, the tug I felt in my heart as I kissed him back was suddenly, inexplicably, very big as well. Dun, dun, dun!
Yes! The plot thickens.
I was like, what a cliffhanger. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Chance with Clyde, a kiss in a big bulk store. So many things. Luke deserves prison, but he won't get time, you know?
So many things. Like, I can't wait to see where this goes. Yes.
It's getting juicy.
It's getting juicy.
Very juicy. But yes, meaty chapters, a little bit of chaos y'all at the beginning. We will talk to y'all real soon. Again, it's our big 100th episode extravaganza coming up. So that'll be our next episode back from our little mini hiatus. So I don't know, it's like a week off, it's not a hiatus, but you know what I mean. look forward to that. Please join us for that. We're very excited for that one. And there might be some surprises along the way. You just have to tune in and see and keep your eyes peeled to the gram. Anyways, any wrap-up thoughts, Michael Ann?
No, I'm just like so excited to see where this goes with Theo. I'm excited to learn more about Clyde. Yes. Like, I really want to know about his art now.
I'm fascinated by this man a little bit.
And I think Luke's I'm predicting that Luke is going to come with his friggin' tail between his legs, like, I miss you in a few chapters.
100% I see that happening. Yeah. Luke seems the type. And it's like, a little too late, buddy. A little too late. Protect our boy Benji at all costs. And Morris, thank you for being a true friend. Absolute legend. You're great. We love you. And yeah, there we go. That's it. Take care of yourselves, everyone. Much love. And we'll chat real soon.
Bye.